And of course, Linda Moulton Howe with us. We're going to come back with her with part three of this incredible story where she gets into ETs, mutilation of animals, abductions of humans, and what does that all mean? And welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, Tom DeLonge is a friend of our show, of course, and he's kind of gone undercover lately since this whole episode.
Well, I can sympathize with him that all of these people never expected that these private conversations were going to be around the world and that we haven't even begun to get to what has to be answers in emails to some of these questions that have been posed so far in the ones that have been leaked. And that means there has to be a lot more about UFOs, ETs, and in this third half hour about the WikiLeaks dumps of hacked John Podesta emails, I would like to share some more excerpts from now deceased Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. In 1964, he received his doctorate in science from MIT with a focus on aeronautics and astronautics. Apollo 14 launched from Earth on January 31, 1971, with astronauts Edgar Mitchell, Alan Shepard, and Commander Stuart Roosa. Edgar Mitchell piloted the lunar module and with Alan Shepard landed on the moon's surface February 5, 1971. The two astronauts spent 33 hours collecting 100 pounds of lunar samples. And during their return to Earth, Edgar Mitchell was staring out the window of Apollo 14, and he was looking at the sun, the moon, Earth, and stars. And later in a 2007 documentary called Shadow of the Moon, he said, quote, "Suddenly I realized that the molecules of my body and the molecules of the spacecraft and the molecules in the body of my partners were prototyped and manufactured in some ancient generation of stars. And that was an overwhelming sense of oneness, of connectedness. It wasn't them and us. It was, that's me. That's all of it. It's one thing. And it was accompanied by an ecstasy, a sense of, oh my God, wow, yes, an insight, an epiphany," close quote. Dr. Mitchell left NASA in 1973 and founded the nonprofit Institute of Noetic Sciences to support research into consciousness and evolving human potential. And at my website, earthfiles.com, in this part three, I have one of the newer images of our Earth from the moon that I think is one of the most breathtaking I've ever seen. And I can imagine Edgar Mitchell looking at our Earth from the shadowy moon and out to the stars and looking at something like this and having that epiphany of oneness and that it all was somehow linked, mind to mind to matter to light. Now, from WikiLeaks, we'll go back one step because this is really amazing. When Dr. Mitchell passed at age 85, and this was on February 4th, 2016, this year, it was on the eve of the 45th anniversary of his February 5th, 1971 lunar landing. He died the day or the night of what would have been the 45th year since he walked on the
moon. Wow.
Yeah. From WikiLeaks, here is an excerpt from Dr. Mitchell's email to John Podesta 2.5 years ago on June 25th, 2014. The subject was Dr. Mitchell's request for a meeting to discuss disclosure with John Podesta, then counselor to President Barack Obama. And here it is. "Dear John Podesta, as we move into the last half of 2014, the need for extraterrestrial disclosure intensifies. Thank you for your kind consideration and response to my email. This 4 July weekend, I will meet with President Obama's friend, Ambassador Hamamoto, at the U.S. mission in Geneva during their Independence Day celebration. While in Geneva, I will also speak at the UN and the European Space Agency regarding why we must move forward with disclosure and specific programs such as manned moon missions, since some scientists and others are calling for moon colonization due to what they perceive is happening on Earth. John, with this email, I am requesting a conversation with you and President Obama regarding the next steps in extraterrestrial disclosure for the benefit of our country and our planet. Close quote. 1 year later, on July 10th, 2015, astronaut Mitchell emailed again about a Skype meeting to John Podesta, and he wanted it with President Obama, quote, to discuss disclosure and the difference between our contiguous universe, nonviolent, obedient ETI, and the celestials of this universe, close quote. My interview with Grant Cameron picks up now with a seeming contradiction. Nonviolent, obedient ETIs and celestials of the universe on planet Earth, where worldwide animal mutilations and human abductions are linked to UFOs for decades. Here now back to Grant of presidentialufo.com in Winnipeg, Canada.
So why are ETs mutilating animals around the world and abducting humans?
Well, you get into that. If you ask the experiencers and you say, is this evil? Only 9% will say it's evil. You say, if you had to do this over again, if you could get the aliens to stop doing it, 83% would say, no, don't stop it. So we have this idea that it's some sort of invasion. And I maintain through my discussions with Mary Rodwell that if you regress everybody deeply and you ask them, did you agree to be in this situation, everybody will agree that this was something they planned before they came in here, that this is not abduction. This is an agreement to raise consciousness, that these people are playing a role in the whole thing. As to cattle mutilations, we may not know what's going on with cattle mutilations. It may look very bad, but if you were doing cattle mutilations, why would you not take that cow with you? Why would you drop it in front of everybody for people to investigate and make it so bizarre? It's like, this is message time. This is like, make people think, because otherwise you just grab the cow and take it. If you need the fluid or you need whatever, why would you drop the cow? That's the $64,000 question.
Well, but you have also been exposed, like I and others, in our investigations to what people inside the government, behind the matrix, have been alluding to for several decades, that there is a secret war. Humans have allies that are from somewhere else, but there are also enemies, unfriendlies from someplace else. And there is something going on concerning Earth that is a geopolitical territorial conflict. It is a war over who claims us, claims the Earth, claims this solar system, that there is some kind of secret war.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. It's oneness. It's consciousness. You have two laws. It's either oneness, it's consciousness is the basis, which means it's all one, or you have the idea of separation, that it's separate and it's duality, it's good versus bad, us versus them, the Americans versus the Mexicans, and this kind of duality type thing. I don't think, if you look at the experiencers, Edgar Mitchell's survey of the experiencers, 54% are talked to about oneness and love. And you get the, you know, this idea that almost none of them think it's evil. So I believe that they get here. And I go through how a craft is flown. I've got all these people on record of telling me how the craft is flown, how they were allowed to fly it. And it all comes down to this idea of consciousness being the basis of this thing. That's how they fly the craft. That's how they move around in time and space. Is you have to understand oneness, that there is no time, there is no space, there is no physical universe, that it's all consciousness, and it's like a dream thing, and they understand this, and we don't. We still think it's a physical 3D world with time and space. We're still living in the rules of Newtonian physics, and we believe that things are measurable and that time is a real thing, that space is a real thing. Even back in Einstein days, he was saying that these things are probably going to be illusions. My personal opinion is that we've got a lot of the basic stuff wrong, that when you get into quantum physics, that all this kind of stuff really starts to be questionable as to what is reality and how does reality actually work.
A lot of papers are beginning to surface in science about the question, could this universe be someone else's computer simulation?
Yeah, that's the same idea, exactly the same idea, except they're changing it as a computer simulation. And if you look at the channelers or the consciousness people, they'll say it's all like a dream. It's not a real 3D solid thing that we think it is. And I always reference people to go and look at the work that was done at Stanford University on lucid dreaming. And it's first established in 1975 at Stanford that you could actually be awake in a dream. And the people that come out of those dreams will tell you that it was more real than the real world, more real than reality. And so if that's a dream, and that's where you start to really question whether we really know what's going on. People will say, well, okay, even some of the aliens will say, we weren't abducted, but they come in the dreams. And the alien will say, we come to you in your dreams because now you're in our world. And that's what I think they are. They're in this sort of lucid dream type thing where they're able to come into the physical reality and then go back. Or you'd see the number one being reported by experiencers, according to the Edgar Mitchell survey, is not a gray, it's not an alien, it's a ball of light. And so the question is, if it's a ball of light that changes into an alien that a lot of people will describe, is it physical or is it a ball of light? And they're able to move from this sort of a lucid dream type world into the physical world, back into their world, and we just think that all that world is illusionary and that we live in the real world, which is not the way it is, that they're in the real world and we're in the illusion.
But why would another dimension bother with humans on planet Earth in this small arm of the Milky Way galaxy?
Because once you get into that world, it's like a person who has a psychedelic experience or somebody who has the Nirvana experience of meditation or Edgar Mitchell's experience when he's coming back and he had this experience where he realized he was one with the universe, that we're all one. And so once you realize that it's all one, then you're into the help mode. When you're in the separation mode, when you think everything is separate, we're individual, then it's rape, pillage, and steal, whatever you can get. Whoever's got the most toys when they die wins. That's the world we live in now, is this separation world where it's me versus you, and if I don't steal your stuff, you're going to steal my stuff, and we kill all the bad people, and there's bad people, and we're the good people. We're always the good people. But in a oneness universe where we realize we're all leaves on the same tree, then you have this idea where you're there to help, that you're there to grow, that that's what evolution, what reincarnation is about, is becoming better and better and better, and it comes into this world of helping people rather than the idea of being separate from everybody else and wanting to gather up physical things.
Well, Grant, controlled remote viewer Lynn Buchanan, who worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency at Fort Meade, Maryland in 1986 to 1989, told me one of his remote viewing tasks was to remote view friendly and unfriendly extraterrestrials in this universe. Lynn said that he and other remote viewers have reported that the universe is teeming with life. A lot of it is friendly and wants trade routes, but there are real unfriendlies and they like to exterminate and control and have territory. And our planet is a reflection of those differences. One of Edgar Mitchell's emails to John Podesta said that the ETIs in the contiguous universe are not going to allow violence on Earth. But that seems contradicted by the fact that humans are in a century in which we have had nonstop violence on Earth, and the biggest arguments are over religious issues.
No, it's not true. My major was political studies, and I studied Russian government, and I know that the key number one, two, three exterminations in the 20th century had nothing to do with religion. The number one was the Chinese, 1967-75 period, up to 78 million people killed. There was no religion involved there at all. That was a communist, atheist regime, same as Stalin and Lenin in the Soviet Union, was 20 million people estimated killed. And that had nothing to do with religion. People in Cambodia were executed. That had nothing to do with religion. What it comes down to is separation. It's believing that I'm different from you. The Republicans are better than Democrats, or Democrats are better than Republicans. The whites are better than blacks, and, you know, Germans are better than Jews. It's separation that causes all evil and war. Religion, yes, plays a part, because it's separation. My religion's better than your religion. But if you take a look at what's going on in the United States, this big divide between the Republicans and Democrats, this sort of standoff where it almost looks like it's going to be a civil war, the Syria-type situation, that's got nothing to do with religion. That's got to do with political ideologies. So it's separation and not religion. Tom DeLong brings this into Skunk Works and into these people, and he says that religion is the basis of all UFO stuff, and that the aliens are getting all the religions to fight against each other. It's like the U.S. military, it's like we just need another enemy. You know, if we run out of the Arabs and blaming North Korea, then we're going to go after the aliens. So when you give the briefing to the president, you say they're evil aliens and we need to spend money on weapons and we have to fight them off because they're coming to get us. It's the whole separation argument. It's we're the good guys and the aliens are the bad guys.
If the truth were your and Edgar Mitchell's perspective that the universe is one and entangled,
yeah,
and everything is fine, why wouldn't the United States government and England and others have told the entire world about the presence of other intelligences that are entangled in one and everything is fine long ago?
Because they're still living in a world of separation. It's run by the U.S. military.
That it isn't all just one agenda and it isn't just one ETI. That there are ETIs that may want us to evolve and are trying to hurry our evolution because they know that there are bad guys and that we are vulnerable as long as we are being kept in the dark about what is in this universe.
It's not a direct thing where they land on the White House lawn like an invasion and tell us how to live our lives. It's definitely not what's going on. It's a very, very complex phenomena, and Tom DeLong is saying his people are telling him that, and I would agree with that, that it's much more complex than people think it is.
And George, we're now back full circle to Tom DeLong's discussions with his advisors about the ancient so-called gods of Earth actually being extraterrestrials that have warred with each other here through the solar system, through the Milky Way galaxy and beyond.
You know, Linda, the fact that Tom was able to get through to John Podesta in the beginning, to do these emails in the beginning, that's a testament to him.
Well, yeah, I think that he has, however, remember when I did that interview with him on Coast, he said it was an aerospace meeting.
Right.
And I don't know if it was Robert Bigelow, but that's where it started. And that person who was the aerospace person had the connections that started with the military that have led to the two generals now and Weiss at Skunk Works. And I think, like Grant, this is a tremendously important, significant step in terms of the level at which this is now being discussed. And if they're finally getting ready to open this up in January 2017, it's way past time.
And it really is. Coming up next, a Connecticut attorney goes on the record for something he saw. Linda Moulton Howe has that story when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And don't forget, you can email her at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. And as you know, listening to this program over the years, we have had a lot of people on who have had UFO reports. Now, Linda, you've got one with a Connecticut attorney. Tell me about this one.
Right, and it's really important because in his entire life, he felt like he could be hurt professionally and otherwise if he ever told this. And now, finally, he reached out to me. And to set the stage, over the decades of UFO reports, there's been one sort of repeated description that has been in U.S. reports and other parts of the world, so completely around the planet. And that's when people say it looked like two pie pans or plates put together at the rims. Now, there is one historic photograph that was close enough to show details of a round aerial craft that looked like two pie pans joined at the rim with three windows below the rim. And this is very similar to what this attorney saw And I have a photograph at Earth Files. It's been very interesting to learn about this photograph that was taken back in June 28, 1967 in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. This was with a Polaroid camera. You can't fool that. And this was a father taking a photograph of his son, and in comes this thing close. And this is this photograph at Earth Files for people to look at in the context that now we're going to go to the 1980s from the 60s, but it is very similar in some ways. And in this trying to describe what was seen that many years ago, it left that man who took this photo and the attorney we're going to be introduced to convinced that this is something from someplace else in the universe.
Hmm.
Now, the name of the attorney, and it's not often that I am able to give professionals full real name with their enthusiasm, and that his name is William H. Cashman from New Haven, Connecticut. He was trying to describe to me recently about this encounter that he had some 40 years ago that left him convinced the aerial craft that he saw really close up from only about 30 feet away was from somewhere else in this universe. And it's so interesting. He first contacted me in a typed hard mail letter. Came beautiful white envelope, very beautifully done. And he wrote, quote, "I never talked about it because I was a new attorney in town." This is back in the early 80s. "People were very much less accepting of the phenomena at that time. But now I'm 71 years old and do not want the experience to die with me. This should be added to the volume of information we have, especially in light of the government's debunking," close quote. He gave me permission to use his real name and lifetime location in the New Haven and Madison, Connecticut region on the waters of Long Island Sound. Attorney Cashman's experience begins back in the early 1980s after a peaceful, relaxing day at the Hammonasset Beach near his home in Madison. Here from New Haven is attorney William H. Cashman.
I was married at the time. And my wife and I spent from noontime till probably about 3 or 3:30 at the beach in Madison, and this is the town beach. We returned home, and we were both joggers, and decided we'd go for a jog into a park called Hammonasset Park. So we started our jog along a road that we lived on, which is a country road, and came to an open field at the fork in a road, and it was about maybe a 3-acre field. Jogged by it many times before using the same route. I was on the inside, my wife was to my left, and I looked in the field, and approximately 30 feet from the edge of the road was a UFO, like two plates inverted on top of each other. It was about 20 to 25 feet off the ground, more like 20. We went into a ditch on the side of the road to look at it. It was probably 25 feet at most from the side of the road.
Colors?
It was light metallic gray, about 25 feet in diameter, maybe 15 feet high. It had three windows, and there was light behind all three windows. And it was hovering there, making no noise at all. It wasn't oscillating at all. It was just hanging there perfectly still.
What were the colors in the windows of the light?
They were yellow, but not like our lighting. It kind of had a weird aspect to it. It was a little darker yellow.
What was weird?
The color just seemed a little off to me. So I spent a fair amount of time studying it because at that point in my life, I didn't believe in extraterrestrials or UFOs. I was sort of the kind of guy that said, if I see one from 20 feet, I'll believe it. And there it was. And so I was looking for rivets or seams, and it was absolutely, at least on the side facing me, was absolutely seamless. There was no rivets. It was just one piece. There was no discernible entry point or door. There was no propulsion system because you would be able to hear any type of propulsion. So we stared at it for 5, 6, 7 minutes. And I started focusing in the last 2 minutes on the windows, hoping I'd see something walk by. Nothing did. And I continually looked over my shoulder down a country road, which gets very little traffic, hoping somebody would come by and I was going to wave them down to have them confirm this UFO. But nobody drove by during that period of time. And then after 6 or 7 minutes, I decided to try to walk under it to see if it had a landing gear or any legs on it or way to land. So I was going to walk under it and just take a look. And as I did that, it took off. And when it took off, the UFO itself made no noise whatsoever, but there was a whoosh of air. And then this is the strangest part of the whole scene, is that it did a strobe effect and got fainter, and it was going slow, not fast. Before it got to the treetops, it totally disappeared. So you didn't watch it fly away. It just totally disappeared.
What was the strobe effect like?
Well, July and August, the roads get really hot, and they get heat waves coming off the roads. And if you watched a car drive into the heat waves, it would get fainter and fainter and disappear. And that's exactly what I saw. It just went up and got fainter and fainter and was bouncing a little bit and then just disappeared. The most spectacular thing was the way it left. And there was just no question. I remember at the time thinking this is somewhere in another universe at this point.
Now, what did your wife say?
Well, when I stood up to go towards the craft, she was screaming at me to get back there because she was afraid something might happen to me. But she was more upset and afraid. I had a feeling of real calm. I had a feeling of they knew we were there and that they weren't out to do anything bad. And I felt very calm looking at it.
In your life to date, at age 71, have you ever had a very vivid dream, like a virtual reality, that seems linked to that craft and what was in the craft?
No, I've never had any dream concerning it at all.
Have you ever heard in your area where you live, in Madison, Connecticut, of anyone else having an encounter with a craft, abductions, animal mutilations, beams of light, or anything else?
Well, the next morning after this event, it was a Sunday that it happened, and in Monday's New Haven Register, in the far left-hand column on the front page, there was an article entitled, Clinton Man Sees UFO. He wasn't in the same location I was. Clinton is the next town over from where I saw it. He called the police and got it reported to the newspaper. So I know on that date somebody saw a UFO. And I think there is still a lot of people out there who have seen things that don't report them.
What is your own attitude now on the question, are we alone in this universe?
Absolutely not. I'm totally convinced there's no craft that we're going to have for the next 500 years that could even come close to doing what this did. You've got a craft that weighs tons and is hanging in midair with no noise, no sound at all, and not oscillating half an inch. And the other thing I thought was important, if this were a drone of some type, an alien drone, why would there be windows and why would there be light on inside? So it had to be occupied. I just wish I hadn't walked towards it as soon as I did, you know, and maybe something would have walked across the windows.
As an attorney, what do you speculate could be the reason that something in such an advanced technology would be here?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Why would it be in Madison, hanging in an open field?
Since the early 1980s and being close to that disc craft, so close to the ground, have you ever seen or had any exposure to any other UFO-related event?
Physically, I've never seen another UFO, but an interesting thing just came up. I had told somebody that I was writing you, and they related a conversation that this woman had with her husband. And her husband is in business, has a female client, and out of the blue, she told him about her brother being on his deathbed. The brother died about 2 years ago, and she hadn't told anybody else. He'd always been kind of hazy about what he did for work. And on his deathbed, he told her, "I'm with an arm of intelligence for the U.S. government that's in the business of trying to find out as much as we can about UFOs." And she then asked him, "Are there aliens? Are there UFOs?" And he said, "Absolutely. I've seen them alive, and I've seen them dead." And her next question was, "Are they friendly?" And he said, "No way."
So a man who worked for the United States government in intelligence died in 2014, and on his deathbed, talking to his sister, he tells for the first time in their life that he has worked inside of intelligence on UFOs and ETs. He has seen them alive and dead. And when his sister asks him, "Are they friendly?" he says, "No way."
That's correct. Everything is accurate in what you just said.
Did you get the impression that he explained to her any more details beyond those words, "No way"?
That's all that was related to me, and apparently that's all he said. I was sort of surprised when he said that the aliens weren't friendly, because they could come from more than one place, too.
People that I've talked to over the years who are whistleblowers in various categories, military and government, we are dealing with different types, with different agendas, but the bigger picture is that this universe is teeming with life. And the big mystery is, how has it been kept from the surface life of Earth, humanity, so well for so long?
The governments, they've done a very good job of debunking sightings, not just our government, really good job at debunking.
Yeah, and what is your own bottom line today as we speak in October 2016 about how you feel concerning the future and the truth coming out that we're not alone in the universe?
Well, I think it's fascinating. I wish I were 15, because maybe I'd see the end result at some point, but being 71, I'm probably not going to see that. And they're unearthing these planets in what they call the Goldilocks zone now that could have life on them. So I think it's absolutely amazing from a personal standpoint. I was not religious, and I felt like heaven was something that didn't exist. And after seeing what the craft I saw did, I think anything's possible.
Well, Linda, this is another amazing story. How do you come up with these?
Well, a lot of people are seeking me out. If you were in my office on a 24-hour cycle and you got the number of emails and hard mail, lots of people send through hard mail because they don't trust computers and they don't trust phones. And I just keep looking for what seems to me to be honest and genuine efforts to understand something that has happened to people. And in this case, I think it's so important, as he and I discussed as a sidebar, that when you think back in the early 80s when this occurred, and here in Connecticut, between New Haven and Madison, there were two different sightings within the same 24 hours, and yet he, to protect his profession, he decided that he wouldn't talk about this for his whole life. And he didn't until he sent me this formal letter and then we did this interview. But I would like to place this whole issue of the deathbed testimony, which I think is absolutely correct and right and happened, and that the words are being repeated to us. No way are they friendly, at least in terms of what this man had to deal with. A trusted research colleague that I had known since the early 1980s, called me in May of 1994, and this was right after my second book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1, Facts and Eyewitnesses, was first published. And the caller was Ray Boucher. He has a doctorate in theology. He is a devout Christian. He is a pastor in Lincoln, Nebraska, and he has investigated the UFO phenomena for decades. And Ray told me on the phone in 1994 that he had been contacted by two men who showed identification to him from the National Security Agency, Fort Meade, Maryland, and the Defense Intelligence Agency in Washington, D.C. The two agents wanted to talk with Ray about his research into eschatology. That's a branch of theology, and it's concerned with death, judgment, heaven, hell, the end of the world as we know it. And the two men also wanted to read my book, Glimpses Volume 1, and I mailed a copy to give to Ray to give to them, which he did. And on June 21st of 1994, I received a floppy disk from the agents that I call the writers. And their three-page letter to me included this, quote, "The non-human entities, or NHEs, being dealt with in our psi weapons development and who are apparently allowing themselves to be used for a time are neither benevolent nor neutral. Your comments and thoughts, addressing me, concerning ancient civilizations and their contacts with the NHEs needs to be considered in light of the bigger picture of the deception of mankind as a whole. It is only logical that given their non-human, other-dimensional nature, the NHEs would be able to foresee the need to establish a foundational base, the facts of which could be slightly twisted or distorted by the fog of antiquity and forgotten cultural distinctives, to seemingly establish themselves as the bringers of all good things to humanity. But the ultimate manipulators are not human," close quote.
Up next, we call it Conversations with Linda, questions for her over some of the stories you've heard, or even information, tips. We'll take that too.